Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The Securities and Exchange Commission is the watchdog, the federal agency charged with ensuring, in short, that corporations play fair. Not along comes Enron and WorldCom, Tyco, Anderson, and others, and increasingly it seemed clear that, like the hound of the Baskervilles, the watchdog wasn't barking. Neither checks nor balances seemed to matter, and the SEC was simply unable to keep pace. Now, just as the SEC did appear to be getting organized with new laws and committees in place to toughen up on compliance, the SEC itself has once again become the center of the story. The latest trouble centers on the appointment of William Webster as head of this new accounting standards board. Both Webster and the man who brought him in, SEC Chairman Harvey Pitt, find themselves under scrutiny over who knew what and who said what when the man was hired. Politicians and business people are wondering if Pitt can do the job and if the White House will back him. Well, on ABC's This Week, Bush advisor Karen Hughes said, yes.
Under Chairman Pitt's tenure, the SEC has imposed a record amount of fines and has enacted a record number of disgorgements against corporate executives who've been engaged in unethical practices. So if you look at the record is one of a tough crackdown against excesses and abuses in corporate America.
Connection listeners, once again, the Securities and Exchange Commission is making news rather than digging it up. What's happening with corporate reform in this country? Does the SEC need a new person in charge? Will the public or business respond to anything short of heads rolling? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with me today, Senator Paul Sarbanes, Democrat of Maryland, chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, and co-author of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which called for the creation of the Oversight Board, currently at the center of this controversy. Lynn Turner is also with us. He's former chief accountant for the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, and he is currently director of the Center for Quality Financial Reporting at Colorado State University. Also on the program, Bruce Fried, business and politics columnist for The Hill magazine in Washington, formerly chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you very much.
Bruce, can I begin with you as the reporter in this gang to sort of give us a capsule of how we got to the crisis point? For those of us who don't live in the business pages, why is this such a pivotal moment?
It's a pivotal moment because you're talking about an appointment that is critical for really carrying out the accounting reform legislation that Senator Sarbanes authored. He was the driving force behind this, and the purpose of the bill was really to create a system in accounting and in actions by business that would restore integrity and confidence to the reporting by companies, and also to give investors the confidence that the reports that they're getting from companies actually reflect the company's condition. Now, what happened here is that the legislation created an accounting oversight board. And the critical appointment there was the chairman of that board. The chairman was really going to be was setting the tone, would be giving the board direction. Chairman Pitt of the SEC had initially indicated that he was going to be naming a man named John Biggs, the outgoing head of TIAA CREF, as the chairman of the board. The reformers,
they loved that.
They loved it. Oh, yeah. Yes. And, Pitt had offered it to Biggs informally. And then what happened is that you got political pressure. You got political pressure from the accounting industry. They went to their good buddy on the House side, a man named Michael Oxley, who's chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. Pressure was put on Harvey Pitt. Pitt caved and in the end turned to William Webster. Very quickly turned to William Webster, former head of the CIA, former head of the FBI, former federal judge, a man who appeared to be a symbol of rectitude, went ahead, named Webster, but it turned out that Webster had a problem. He informed Harvey Pitt about it. It involved his role as head of the audit committee of a venture capital company, and it also involved how the company handled its auditor that had raised found questions in its accounting. The auditor was fired. The question was, why was it fired? Pitt went ahead, pushed through the appointment of Judge Webster, had a what appeared to be a pro forma investigation. We're really going to find out what will happen with that, because once it came out that there were questions about Webster's, about the U.S. Technologies position that Webster had, then Pitt called for an investigation of his conduct. So you have three investigations going on now, one by the SEC General Counsel, another by the SEC Inspector General. Then you have the General Accounting Office that has been called into this, and then you have Senator Sarbanes, who will be holding hearings in the Banking Committee. So where we stand today is looking at where what happens with the head of the Accounting Oversight Board at the SEC, and really the future direction of implementation of the Sarbanes-Oxley Corporate Reform
Act. All right, Bruce, thanks for that. Let me turn to the senator and find out what is it you hope to accomplish by being a part of the or one of the investigations looking into this, Senator?
Well, first of all, let me say this. Public oversight board over the accounting industry is extremely important in terms of the reforms that we put into place. It's critical. Regrettably, Chairman Pitt has followed a process which has just turned into a debacle. He approached John Biggs, who would have been an extraordinarily able chairman of this oversight board, to get him to do the job. And then when that news of that sort of got around, Pitt came under pressure and he caved into it and, in effect, wouldn't move ahead with Biggs. Now, he announced a board the other day. It's a five-member board, including Bill Webster as its chairman. Now, Bill Webster's rendered distinguished service to the nation, although he's by no means an expert in this field. It now develops that Bill Webster told Chairman Pitt about his involvement with his company as the chairman of its audit committee. And the company's in great difficulty. It's now a penny stock, and it's coming under increased scrutiny. There are a lot of investor suits that have been brought. It apparently the auditing company had indicated, the auditors had indicated to the company that there were troubles with their internal controls, and the company then fired the auditors instead of correcting the internal controls. And this information, which apparently Webster communicated to Pitt, Pitt withheld from the other four commissioners. He did not inform them about it. Now, it's a highly relevant and material piece of information in reaching any judgment.
So is Pitt finished as head of the SEC? Can he continue on even after the investigations?
Well, after he named the oversight board, I called for him to step down. I think his credibility is gone. I think he clearly has indicated he's not supportive of pushing through on the major reforms. And, you know, with each succeeding story, it just goes from bad to worse. And it seems to me now that he needs to move out of that position. We've a number of people have called on the administration to in effect say that to Pitt. And of course, Pitt's been nominated. He's been confirmed. But he hasn't conducted the SEC with a kind of independence, and the commitment to investor protection, I think, is essential in any chairman of the SEC. That's what the SEC has stood for. That's why our capital markets are regarded, or have been regarded at least, as being the best in the world, with being transparent and open and having integrity. And if we lose that, and it's certainly under question now, we lose a very important economic asset for the country. I frankly think that this lack of confidence that investors have in the capital markets is having a broader impact on the economy of our country.
Let me bring Lynn Turner in. Lynn, you were chief accountant to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission in your time there. When you look at what has happened to the SEC in the last year, I mean, does it have any credibility at all?
As I've traveled around and talked to the public, not only here but abroad, I think it's almost universal now that people have lost their trust and confidence in the SEC. And that's really disappointing and somewhat frustrating, because it's probably the first time in the history of the SEC that the investing public has lost that confidence. I think that with the moves of Chairman Pitt to fight the funding that Senator Sarbanes provided for the SEC, which will ultimately result in a reduction of the number of authorized staff at the SEC, that's disappointing. It's disappointing that with this knowledge about Webster, he withheld that information, as well as his chief accountant withheld that information from the other four commissioners, as well as the White House, and perhaps even the others he had to consult with, including Alan Greenspan and Paul O'Neill.
I should mention that we actually called a number of Republicans who have been publicly supportive of Chairman Pitt, and none of them decided to join us on the program. But I wonder, looking at this situation on this particular day, Senator, a day before the election, is this something which basically has to sit on ice for the next 36, 48 hours until after the midterms before we're going to see any action?
Well, presumably the administration is not going to indicate a negative view of Pitt before the election, because it would reflect on their earlier judgment, although I think the public needs to recognize that this is a critical issue that we have here in terms of investor protection. The administration has not been supportive of providing the additional money which many of us in the Congress are seeking for the SEC in order to enable it to do its job. And the chairman himself has been reluctant on that issue, regrettably.
Except Senator Shelby's saying today that he has serious reservation about Mr. Pitt's capabilities. That's got to be an indication, at least from the GOP side, that he's losing favor.
Oh, I think it's clear he's losing favor. It seems that he no longer has the credibility to lead the agency, regrettably. And it's too bad. I mean, he could have made, there were a number of very qualified people who were prepared to serve on this oversight board.
Senator,
and
just
didn't
a quick
go
last,
in that direction.
One quick last question, Senator. If Mr. Pitt were to go, does this board have to start all over again?
Well, the board at the moment has been appointed by the SEC. The SEC made on a split decision. That's another deficiency in Pitt's leadership, because on a matter of this importance, he should have reached a consensus and could have reached a consensus.
But do they get to start over if Mr. Pitt leaves?
Well, I think the legalities are that the board is in place. You'd have to get the members. I haven't followed through on those legalities. But obviously, the whole matter needs to be reexamined. And I see that Bill Webster has indicated that in fact, he's prepared to consider stepping down as the chairman. Of course, his involvement now with this U.S. technologies company is going to come under increasing scrutiny, obviously, because after all, this is the person who's supposed to oversee rigorous standards with respect to accountancy, and yet in his involvement with this company, a lot of questions have been raised about that.
Senator Sarbanes, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Senator Paul Sarbanes, Democrat from Maryland, is chairman of the Senate Banking Committee and in charge of just one of the investigations that's currently aimed at the SEC, its chairman, and the new head of the Accounting Standards Board. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, respect for corporate America, where is it in your mind? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. The Securities and Exchange Commission is much in the news these days, most recently over the selection of Judge William Webster to head the Accounting Standards Board. At a time when the chairman of the SEC knew certain details about his own past and chose not to pass those along to the commissioners, even at a time when politicians are much more concerned with who's going to vote for who tomorrow, this is raising a tremendous amount of political interest in terms of the corporate reform and Americans' attitude about the business community. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program today, Bruce Fried. He's business and politics columnist for The Hill magazine in Washington. He was formerly chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee. Lynn Turner's with us. He's director of the Center for Quality Financial Reporting at Colorado State University and was formerly chief accountant for the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Bruce Fried, let me begin with you if I can. This man, Harvey Pitt, in the office summer of 2001, has about 2 months before he finds himself in manure up to his waistline. And how's he handling it?
I think he's handled it abysmally. What I find interesting is that the fraternity of lawyers who came out of the SEC were very supportive of Harvey when he was named. And they said, oh, Harvey is going to do the right thing. Now, after Pitt left the Securities and Exchange Commission, this was in the mid-70s, he had been the youngest general counsel. Mm-hmm. He went off and he became really the consigliere for the accounting industry. He was at a major Washington law firm. They came to him for help. He led many of the efforts to gut efforts to toughen oversight and regulation of the accounting industry.
So why weren't there squeals of protest when the man was put in the job in the summer of 2001, if in fact he was such a so high up on the lobbyist side?
Well, you had people who did raise questions, but there had been a tradition of people who came out of the private sector who knew how to take off the private sector hat, put on the public hat, who recognized the different responsibilities. You go back and you'll take a look at Joe Kennedy. Here you had a speculator. Roosevelt named him as the first chairman of the SEC. Very serious questions about could he do the job. Well, he got religion, and he really created an agency that developed a reputation that carried it for decades. You had Arthur Levitt, the former head of the American Stock Exchange, who came out of the brokerage industry. He was a champion of the small investor. Under President Nixon, you had some very good appointments as chairman of the SEC. The problem is that Harvey Pitt really didn't recognize that there was a different responsibility and that he was going to come in and be kinder and gentler with the accounting industry. He came in at a time when the accounting industry's reputation collapsed, and justifiably so, because they aided and abetted the corruption that you had in the American business community.
He was insisting, I can do the job, I can do it well.
Oh, yeah, he insisted that he could do it, that he could do it dispassionately, but you found that once he came in, he didn't recognize that there was a different standard of conduct. You know, he held meetings with former clients, with business folks, you know, without his staff there, meetings that raised very serious questions about his judgment, his impartiality.
Right.
Lynn has a very good feeling for this, too, because he followed that this from the standpoint of what this means for carrying out the accounting reform and for aiding and abetting the corruption that went on.
Lynn, the other part of this whole equation that's a little bit woolly to me is the lobbyist side that Bruce is alluding to there. When you were at the SEC, you and Arthur Levitt were the victim of some pretty powerful lobbying that kept some of the reforms that you'd hoped to make from actually taking place. Now we hear that the accounting lobby or the business lobby prevented the appointment of Biggs and put Webster in place. Can you give us a sense of just how powerful that lobby is, what the SEC's up against?
It is a phenomenal lobby. The accounting profession has access to great sums of money. When Chairman Levitt and I were trying to put in reforms that would increase the independence of the auditors and hopefully get us better audits and accurate numbers, the accounting profession went up on the Hill and spent close to $30 million. Quite frankly, it just buys votes on the Hill. And in fact, for the first time ever in the history of the agency, with the money that the accounting profession gave to members of Congress, Congress actually threatened to cut off our funding at the SEC to block any reforms whatsoever. And Congress made it clear unless we watered down those reforms, that is, in effect, what would happen. So the accounting lobby has tremendous power. The five firms, each of the five firms that existed before Arthur Andersen went under, were in the top 20 contributors to the Bush administration election.
But wasn't there a moment when that began to change? Last spring, when the American public and the polls were indicating there was just this universal disgust with the way that, the accounting industry was trying to protect itself in the wake of Enron. And that was that same sort of public disgust that allowed the Sarbanes-Oxley Act to be passed. And have they regrouped their forces now? Is that what you're telling me?
Actually, there was just a moment in time when their power waned. In fact, as we were working on the Sarbanes legislation from the beginning of the year, right up through about the middle of June, because of the amount of money that was going into Washington and the power of that lobby, we had absolutely zero chance of getting any legislation passed. And then when WorldCom broke, within about 7 days, the public's disgust rose to such high levels that the polls did change. And then once the polls changed and it looked like some people may not be able to keep their jobs in Washington, then they came around and voted for Sarbanes, and of course it got signed at the end of July. But since then, when this thing started to go off the front pages of the newspapers, the accountants came right back again and really have done a marvelous job of gutting what was the very heart of the Sarbanes bill by interfering with this process and getting a chairman in place at this accounting oversight board that has is highly unlikely to really implement it in the way that Senator Sarbanes intended.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
Let me just add one thing about Mike Oxley. Oxley is a person who you have to pay great attention to. He's chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. He has been the fundraiser-in-chief for junior Republicans on that committee. He has a person on the committee whose sole responsibility is to be liaison to all of the lobbying organizations. So that would be the accounting folks, the financial services folks. Oxley has been a bitter foe of reform. I think Lynn was absolutely right that it took WorldCom to really rouse the public and to shame these folks on the Hill, on the House side especially, to support accounting reform. But Oxley has been a bitter foe. He's an inveterate foe, and he continues to work against reform.
Even though he co-authored that bill with Sarbanes, you're saying that moment, as Lynn was saying,
he didn't co-author the bill. He didn't know. The fact is, his name is on it because he's chairman of the House Financial Services Committee.
Right.
This is Sarbanes' bill.
I can actually tell you, I was there as they were going through the conference. I was in Washington, D.C. as this thing got drafted, and Oxley fought the bill right up to the very, very last day. And in fact, in the last week, introduced 52 different amendments to try to water down the bill. So his name being on the top is really a misnomer. This is the Sarbanes legislation. Oxley opposed it to the end until he realized that the public opinion polls was going to cost the Republicans the control of the Congress if they didn't pass it. So in the last 24 hours, he came around, said he would support it, but he came way too late to the process.
Lynn and Bruce, will talk more about the politics of it. Let's turn to a little public opinion. Bella's joining us on the line from Hubbardstown, Massachusetts. Hi, Bella.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
I think the Foxes have been in charge of the chicken house for far, far too long.
You figure they're still in charge?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The modern capitalist business ethic seems to value self-service over all other things, and this creates a condition that's incompatible with ethics. Now,
there was a sense, though, Bella, there was a sense that, and I was talking about it earlier on the program, that maybe that was changing when everyone saw just the degree of fraud and shell game that was going on this time last year.
I think that people need to look at it from a class-based perspective. Right now, America is one of the most class-stratified nations on the planet, with an elite class that controls more than 50% maybe 60-70% of the wealth in this country. And we get a sort of neo-Calvinism where these smug, self-righteous people run the thing on the top and congratulate themselves on how moral they are while they prevent equitable distribution of the assets that rightfully belong to all people.
Let me turn to Lynn Turner, if I can, on that. Lynn, is there any way of, if they are smug and self-righteous, is there any way that business can be good?
Actually, I think there is. There is no doubt that there's some rotten apples in the orchard here, but I don't think the whole orchard is gone bad, if you will. When you see people like Warren Buffett, the Sage Omaha, Jack Bogle, who founded Vanguard, actually John Biggs at TIAA Cref, and many others, Paul Volcker, who have stood up and really pushed for reforms, with a lot of support of the business community, you do see some people out there that really want to make change. I think what's more corrupt than business in this particular situation is the ability of special interests to go to Washington and buy votes. And yes, there are some people in business who have been corrupt. We should not forget that. In fact, I think stringing a few of those people up with about 10 feet of rope underneath an oak tree will do more than all the legislation we could ever pass. But we have to make sure that we don't paint everyone with the same broad brush, because there are some good people out there. At the same time, there's also some bad people that we need to deal with as well.
But, you know, Bruce Bell has got a point. I mean, this is public opinion. This is what people are reading in the newspapers and concluding that you know, it's crooks in charge of crooks.
You know, the problem is that you have the organized business community in Washington. That would be the big business trade associations, the business roundtable that represents the CEOs of the big publicly traded companies. You haven't heard either the business roundtable or its members speaking out on business reform. And I think that the silence speaks loudly in this sense. So I think, you know, Lynn is right that you do have some people like Jack Bogle, right, and Warren Buffett, Paul Volcker. Unfortunately, I think they're exceptions because there is silence. And I think that many of these people are complicit in this. They're complicit because of their silence. And they could tell their business organizations, lay off, support the accounting reform, business reform. You haven't heard that. In fact, you now have the Chamber of Commerce that is talking about mounting an effort after the election to gut the accounting reform bill. And I think that's something that we have to be very concerned about, because these guys are waiting to come back and to undo this. And I think the point that Lynn made earlier about how this threatens the investor confidence in the markets, that's something that's very, very disturbing, and is something that we have to pay very close attention to.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Bella, thanks for your call. We're going to Buffalo, New York. James is on the line. Hi, James.
Hello. I just wanted to call to say that I was listening to the other caller with regard to his views on that neo-Calvinism and what have you. I don't agree with that at all. I think that, first of all, we have the ability in America to chart our own course, which I think is a rare and beautiful gift that we have here in America. If I work hard, good things happen. So I don't agree with all the money flowing up to the top. It does happen to be that way, but I think the people who work the hardest are rewarded. That being said, I think that the scandal with the Securities and Exchange Commission is really not the problem. That's a symptom of a much greater problem, and that is what you just discussed while I was waiting to talk, and that seems to be that there is a real ability for special interest groups and lobbyists to alter legislation.
So what do you do, James? Do you give up on the regulatory bodies because they don't appear to be able to function in the face of that?
Well, I think what has to happen, I think, is that the regulatory bodies have got to be held to some kind of accountability, and the accountability doesn't seem to be there, because the only way that should happen is through our elected officials. Unfortunately, there are such cattle in our country that nobody reads the papers or follows what happens with these types of votes in Congress as a result of lobbyist influence, that we don't have the control in place to be able to keep these people in check.
Bruce Fried, we are at something of a peculiar moment now, because the election this week, and people are reluctant to sort of launch into new broadsides, or so it would appear. Do you think that precisely what we're talking about is going to come back sharply into focus after the election?
I think it will. I think it will. You know, if the Democrats keep control of the Senate, that means you will have very vigorous oversight of the Securities and Exchange Commission. With our caller now talking about the need to hold these agencies accountable, to hold public officials accountable,
yeah.
Congress, Sarbanes is getting ready to do that with hearings that he has scheduled after the election. I think that's absolutely critical. It also makes clear how important it is that people vote, because voting does have consequences. The election of George Bush and the Republicans meant that you are going to have a whole slew of people put in place who are going to go very light on business. Basically, we're going to be giving them the green light. And I think with Harvey Pitt, you're seeing the consequences of that.
And Lynn Turner, it seems almost as if there's a disconnect here, that people will read in the paper that the economy is in a bad way, and they read that public confidence is down, and not really connecting themselves to the SEC and to the fact that they're actually a part of this confident lack of confidence.
I think that's absolutely true, Dick. I think that people have not understood exactly how important the commission is in regulating a fair and orderly market, in ensuring that all the participants in the market are good citizens, and they've missed that. And in fact, I think to some degree, both Congress and the administration came out after the Sarbanes Act and said everything would be fine, and the public took them at their word. In fact, that is not the case. And as Bruce said, I think with the Democrats in control of the Senate, with Senator Sarbanes there, you'll see that the legislation does get in place in close oversight. My worst fear is that that switches, and then Chairman Pitt's allowed to remain even after this cover-up, and it just in no way then can restore the investor confidence in the markets, which we need so badly today, because these markets are clearly the engine that have driven the economy. And as the markets have run out of gas, so has the economy.
All right, our number is 1-800-423-8255. James, thanks a lot for your call. Connection listeners, we continue our conversation about the Securities and Exchange Commission when we come back after the break with your calls and more from Bruce Fried and Lynn Turner on restoring public confidence and Harvey Pitt and how long he'll last. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-TALK, to join our conversation about the Securities and Exchange Commission at yet another particularly difficult moment for its beleaguered chairman, Harvey Pitt, as he faces accusations of behaving badly in the appointment of William Webster and not passing along information that Mr. Webster had made very clear to Mr. Pitt. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, and Pat's on the line. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I love having an opportunity to listen to these conversations. I'm calling to say that I think what you're talking about has a direct effect on why we don't vote.
Well, there's an interesting point, because Bruce was just saying the only thing you can do about it is to get people out and to vote.
I know, and I heard him say that, but you know, we try to put good people in, but we feel disenfranchised because the specials, the lobbyists, as you were just saying,
yeah,
they had things going one direction until the polls said something different. And I just think we feel frustrated.
Are you saying that in your view, Pat, that voting for one party or another party doesn't really make a difference, that you end up with politicians who are all held hostage by these special interest groups?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Well, Lynn, it's hard to disagree with Pat.
I think Pat's right on. I think that even when you do put good people back in Washington, D.C., it, quite frankly, it's an island of insanity and has a cancer that sooner or later even overtakes the most well-intentioned people. But I setting that aside, though, we do have a great country. You do have the right to vote. It's important that people do get out and vote their conscience, and regardless of which side you're on, this is a great opportunity for investors. We got 85 million in America for them to go in and vote how they see it and who they want in.
But can I get you to talk about confidence, though? Because it seems to me in many ways that's what it comes down to. Confidence in the politicians, confidence in the marketplace. And what we're hearing is that there's nobody making a really concerted move to try and establish that confidence. And in fact, the prevailing sense is one of skepticism. Well, maybe it's not such a bad thing.
Oh, well, I think it is good to be skeptical in the current environment that we're in. Yes, there is a lack of confidence. There should be a lack of confidence, quite frankly, because there are some things in the system that are broken. Unless we get the Sarbanes legislation enacted, investors are right back out there in shark-infested waters. Yet you can vote and make a difference. You can ask the people who are running for election, where do they stand on corporate reform? When people did register their opinion in June, it did make a phenomenal change in the legislation we did get. So I think that's probably the best indication that your vote and your opinion does count, but you got to exercise it. Our problem is that all too often, way too often, investors and Americans don't vote and don't right. weigh in with their public opinion. And if we think it's bad, is as it is today, to the extent that people don't vote, it will be much worse.
So, Pat, are you going to vote tomorrow?
I'm going to try to. I'll give all this some consideration. Thank
holding
you
your
very
feet
much.
To the fire.
Right.
Yes. Can I just chime in on that?
Yes, yeah, sure.
You know, by not voting, she's getting the type of government that she's complaining about, the government actions. And I think there are clear differences that now have emerged between the parties on the issue of business reform.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Lynn is absolutely right that we went through a period where you had members of both parties who were complicit in the corruption. You know, this is the case that he was referring to with Arthur Levitt when Levitt was trying to come out with rules that would rein in the accounting firms, right. And they were blocked by 13 senators who sent a letter warning the commission to back off. But you have had a crisis. The crisis has given some of the members backbone. Now you do have a consensus, at least on the Democratic side, and I think there are Republicans joining with them on that. Dick Shelby, who will be, you know, the top Republican on the Banking Committee. Michael Enzi, the accountant, who is a Republican on the Banking Committee from Wyoming. These are people who I think are offended by what they see. So I think that it's critical that voters let their members know what their concerns are and what prices they might pay if they're not responsive.
1-800-423-8255. Pat, thanks for your call. We're going to Medford, Massachusetts. Dave's on the line. Hi, Dave.
Hi. A couple questions. I'm trying to understand what it is that influences Harvey Pitt to make the decisions he makes. I think he's supposed to be, he has a somewhat independent position. He doesn't have to worry about campaign contributions from lobbyists. The SEC's funding has been cut recently by the administration, and he didn't. I don't think he seems to mind that much.
It wasn't cut. It just wasn't raised as much as everyone thought it was going to be raised. I think it still was about a 75% increase over.
Okay, but I thought the Congress had allocated something like $700 and some odd million, and
the White House backed off and said we may not be able to give it all to you because we have other priorities. I remember that as well.
Right, but I don't think he doesn't seem like a commissioner who really is looking for maximizing what the SEC can do. So I'm trying to understand what pressure can be put on this guy, or is it simply that he's just of like mind?
Well, Bruce Fried, is he beholden to the people who helped him get to where he is? Is that what the problem is?
I'm not sure it's a question of being beholden. The fact is he's from that crowd, and he has not been able to change his reference
points. Now, that crowd, be more specific.
That crowd means the accounting industry and the broader business community. When I said before that he was a consigliere for the accounting industry, as the lead lawyer for that industry, he was carrying their water. He was going to court. He was giving them the intellectual and the legal underpinning. Harvey Pitt understands the industry. Frankly, he understands it too well, and he's not been able to recognize that there is a change in role that that really is required when you become chairman of a regulatory agency.
Lynn, you've been in all these different roles, working for government, working for the SEC, now teaching. I mean, can you say, oh, this is my new job, then I need to move past the people who were I was working for my old job?
Absolutely, you can. I've worked under three different chairmen, David Reuter, Richard Breeden, Arthur Levitt. Arthur Levitt, as Bruce mentioned, came from Wall Street, and a lot of people thought he would be an advocate for Wall Street, but instead he turned out to be really the small investors' champion. So you can change. I've seen a number of other commissioners come in as well and be able to change hats fairly quickly. I think Chairman Pitt spent so long, like 25 years, representing these firms. When I was chief accountant, it was not unusual to have Harvey Pitt sitting across the table from me on the opposite side. And he also worked quite extensively as a lobbyist for these interests up on the Hill in Washington, D.C. And in fact, that is the principal reason, one of the principal reasons he was chosen for the job. Phil Graham, who was then chair of the Senate Banking Committee, felt that Harvey Pitt would deregulate the markets a substantial amount. When Chairman Pitt came in, that's exactly what he intended to do, and then times changed. Chairman Pitt's not been able to change with those times, just ideologically.
Right.
While Harvey's a wonderful person, you'd love to have him as a next-door neighbor if you knew him. Ideologically, he is so deregulatory in nature, he's just the wrong man at the wrong time for the wrong agency.
Okay, Dave, I hope that answers your question. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And to Wayland, Massachusetts, Robert's on the line. Hi, Robert.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
I live a little south of the New Hampshire border in Massachusetts.
Right.
And for a couple of months, we've been absolutely deluged with political stuff on television.
From New Hampshire, from Massachusetts, from Maine. Okay, I can imagine.
And not once have I heard a candidate from either side of the state line comment on the issues you're talking about today. Those concerns seem to be so far down in the list of issues that they don't even think about it.
Bruce,
I don't know who to vote for.
Bruce Fried, why if this is such a fine point in understanding the power of lobbyists, isn't it a bigger issue at election time?
It's been a big issue in certain states. For instance, in Colorado, where Lynn lives, that has been a major battleground between Wayne Allard, the incumbent Republican senator, and Tom Strickland, the Democrat, who's challenging him. My sense is that this is an undercurrent issue. It's something that doesn't have the type of really gross sex appeal that candidates will be able to take in and turn into that type of hot-button issue. But I think it feeds into the anxiety that people feel about the performance of the economy. So I think it's one of those issues that really contributes to the buzz that you have. Now, you know, there are issues that parties use to define themselves. Social Security is one. Taxes are another. So in New Hampshire, where the caller is listening to the battle between Shaheen and Sununu, you're going to have ads that focus on that, where they can boil down, candidates can boil down, you know, what they really stand for. But I think that this whole issue of corporate corruption contributes to the anxiety, the unease that really is driving, I think, a decent number of voters.
Yeah, but being so very, very low on the totem pole, apparently, one wonders how much sincere attention it's going to get in the Congress.
You mean even once the new politicians are there?
Exactly.
Oh, I think it'll get attention there, because you have Sarbanes holding the hearings, and I think in Washington, the focus will be different.
I hope you're right, but I still don't know who to vote for.
I do think the caller raises an interesting point, and it goes back to something that Bruce mentioned. I do think, depending upon who controls the Senate, you will have two different outcomes. If the Democrats maintain control of the Senate, I think you'll have a tremendous amount of focus on it and attention on it, whereas if the Republicans end up with the Senate, I think it's going to be much further down on the list. And because of Michael Oxley and his power in the House, I think you will see some very, very strong attempts to roll back Sarbanes and gut the legislation. There's just no doubt in my mind, given what transpired this summer, that's what's going to happen. So I think this is a very important issue for investors, for voters, even if it isn't out front and center like it is here in Colorado, where Wayne Allard absolutely did oppose us and failed to publicly come out in strong support of Sarbanes-Oxley towards the end. I think it is an important issue in some areas, and where it's not, I think that the public needs to recognize that it's out there and make it an issue when they go to the polls.
Robert, thanks a lot for your call. Good luck
with
your vote.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. 1-800-423-8255. What do you think, Bruce Fried, will see in the days after the election? Is this going to be pushed back onto the agenda? Because part of what makes it so interesting is that it's all still on that page of Harkin and Halliburton and, you know, questions about insider roles that plague the administration, their reluctance to give information on the energy task force, all that sort of stuff. I mean, it ends up in that great big fat file which doesn't get addressed.
I think you have little bombs out there waiting to go off. You're absolutely right about Halliburton. Harkin continues to be a running sore, and the president's comments or claims seem to be belied by new disclosures. I think that you have the problem with the energy task force. It's not that it's a reluctance. It's the absolute refusal of this administration to disclose information that it is required to disclose. But I think you'll have the hearings in the Sarbanes Committee, the Banking Committee, after the election. I think what happens afterward really depends on the outcome of tomorrow's election. I think Lynn is absolutely right. If the Democrats do keep control of the Senate, then this issue is front and center. And you have Senator Sarbanes, who has religion on this. You also have Carl Levin, the chairman of the Permanent Investigation Subcommittee over on governmental affairs,
Bruce,
who's very concerned.
Let me, if I can, just get a last word from Lynn. Can
Go
the
ahead.
SEC, Lynn, be repolished and represented as the sort of regulatory agency people would like to see it?
First, let me say that the staff of the SEC, when given the resources, which they obviously don't have right now, and actually, in fact, the raise in funding that they are getting is not enough even to keep the people around that they currently have authorized. But if given the right resources and given new leadership, both in the chairmanship as well as in the office of the chief accountant, then I think absolutely this agency can come back and get the job done that the public expects and will, in fact, do that.
Lynn, thanks for being with us. Lynn Turner is a former chief accountant for the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, currently directing the Center for Quality Financial Reporting at Colorado State University. Bruce Fried, thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
Bruce is business and politics columnist for The Hill magazine in Washington, himself former chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.